Thank you. Thank you very much. Please have a seat. Even though I'm from California, it's great to be here in Texas, where I was born, by the way. It's like a breath of fresh air to be here, just so you know. But what's interesting, maybe you've traveled like I have or stayed at a friend's house or in a hotel, and you have that moment where you wake up and you wonder, where am I? Well, that never happens to me in Texas. It doesn't. Because Texas is the only state, when you stay in a hotel room and you walk down to get breakfast, that the waffle machine is shaped like the state. This does not happen in Vermont or Rhode Island. Be a very small waffle, wouldn't it? I did mention I'm from California. My family, we live in Southern California, so we're about as far away from kind of the San Francisco area as you would be from Dallas. A little bit further, but about the same distance. And my family was up in the kind of San Francisco area visiting a small town by the name of Sausalito. And we kind of were biking that day. We came in, we were walking into the city, and I noticed these two college-age girls taking money to care for the polar bears. So I said to my wife, I said, you know what? I just got to ask them a question. I'll catch up with you in a minute. And my wife knows where this can often go because I love to engage and talk with people who see the world differently than I do. So I went walking up to them. I said, hey, I think that's great. You're taking money to care for animals. I'm curious. I said, you know, polar bears aren't anywhere near here, which is fine. Do you care for the most vulnerable beings and humans amongst us, namely those in the womb? I'm just curious, are you pro-life or are you pro-choice? Well, you could probably guess where this conversation went very quickly. In fact, the girl just almost instantly started asking me questions with all these assumptions about me. I said, I actually didn't tell you anything about myself. I'm just curious, since you care for these animals thousands of miles away, do you care for the most vulnerable segment of human beings amongst us? I just want to know if you're consistent. She starts mocking me. In fact, she calls one of her friends over and says, hey, this guy here is pro-life, even though I hadn't said what I believed once. She said, and her friend looks at me and goes, oh, really? I've had 3 abortions. And they felt good. She starts saying to me, she goes, really? Like, you care about the embryo? I mean, it's this small, it's inside. I mean, how do you know embryos even exist? Do you have one inside of you? I said, how do you know polar bears exist? Do you have one inside of you? I actually think sarcasm is the 6th love language. Now, why do I bring this up? Because the reality is I didn't want the conversation to go that direction. But when we talk about issues as divisive and heated as abortion, it can just go south fast, can't it? So what happens is we don't talk about it. We don't listen to each other. We don't advance a case for life because of how divisive this topic is. Friends, we cannot respond that way. Because life is at stake. Life is at stake. In fact, I thank God when I got this invitation. I've spoken at a lot of pregnancy resource centers. I've never spoken for one that is funded and supported and sponsored entirely by a church. That tells me you don't even just talk about it, but you're making a difference in your own community when it comes to life. So it might be helpful, since I get to share this morning, to tell you where I'm coming from. And you might want to know that I am pro-choice. When it comes to the issue of abortion, I am pro-choice. If the unborn is not human. I think a woman should be able to choose where she lives, the clothes she wears, who she marries, if she gets married, her profession. We should all have choice. I would be pro-choice when it came to the abortion issue if the unborn were not members of the human race. See, that's the heart of the question. If you take almost any ethical issue of our day, take the most controversial ones, guns rights, euthanasia, immigration, race, you name it. You can really almost sum it up to one question that it boils down to. There's really one question at the heart of the abortion debate. And here's an example that might help. This comes from my friend Scott Klusendorf, a pro-life speaker. He said, imagine that, so imagine with me, when this service is done, before the football games start, you go home and you decide to do the dishes. Now, for some of you, this takes a lot of imagination. So you're doing the dishes and your back is turned. And say you have a younger brother or sister or a younger child or grandchild. Behind you says something like, "Mommy, can I kill this?" And before you said yes or no, what question would you ask? What is it? Right? If you turn around and it's a cockroach, you'd be like, hurry up. If you turn around and it's a puppy, you'd be like, whoa, that's messed up. We don't harm puppies. If you turn around, the five-year-old's like, I pulled this infant out of a carriage down the street. Can I kill this? You'd be like, whoa, definitely no. And even though you're only five, you need some serious counseling. Now, why should we treat a human being differently than we treat a cockroach? It's because of what a human being is. We don't have obligations to rocks or cockroaches like we do to human beings. You see, if the unborn is not a human being, then no justification is necessary for abortion. If the unborn is a member of the human race, then what justification is adequate to take the life of an innocent, precious human being? Now, as Christians, why do we care about the unborn? The answer is somewhat simple. Because all human beings are made in the image of God. That's Genesis chapter 1. Friends, neither male or female, rich or poor, black or white, old or young, in the womb, not in the womb. All human beings bear the mark of the Imago Dei and have value because of the kinds of things that they are. That's why even James writes, he says in James 1:27, good religion involves those who care for orphans and widows. See, the world throughout history wouldn't care for orphans and widows because they'd be considered a drag on society. They can't help us flourish, so why care for them? In fact, in the ancient Roman culture, if you had a child and an infant, you didn't want it for whatever reason, you could just leave it outside to die or be eaten by the animals. Christians came along, they're like, wait a minute, those are human beings. Let's care for them and start these places called orphanages. People that were sick became a drain on society, and Christians are like, wait a minute, let's start these things we call hospitals to care for the sick. Yes, some people who were Christians or acted in the way or the name of Christ had done some pretty terrible things. We recognize that and should mourn of that, but that's only a small piece of the picture. The greatest acts of justice, I would argue, throughout the history of the world are by Christians who took their faith seriously and said, we are going to care for the least amongst us. Because everybody is made in the image of God. Friends, that's why we're pro-life. Is the unborn are precious, unborn human persons. I know some of you sitting here right now are going, I cannot believe I showed up today. Why is it that I always come to church and the pastor or the guest speaker is speaking something that seems to directly deal with me? In fact, there's probably some of you that are like, if I knew this was Pro-Life Sunday, I wouldn't show up. Because my guess is, in an audience this size, there's quite a few of you that have an experience, male or female, in different ways with abortion. And I want you to know something very important. Abortion is not the unforgivable sin. Friends, no matter your past, God loves you and wants you to experience the freedom of his loving grace. I do stuff all over social media, whether it's Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. And during a during COVID, my son said to me, he's 17, he goes, "Dad, if you want to reach my generation, you need to get on TikTok." I was like, okay. So I started a TikTok account. I post 3 or 4 videos a week. I think I've done 2 dancing videos, but a lot of it I engage with ideas and sometimes answer questions people ask me there. And this week I posted a video of somebody asked me, "How would you respond if your daughter had an abortion?" My daughter's 14, almost 15 years old. She's blonde. She's a surfer, volleyball player, lives in California. She's just a beautiful, sweet kid. And by the way, before I answer this, if this was my daughter, that means we're talking about my grandchild. Here's what I would say. My daughter said, "Dad, I've had an abortion." I would wrap my arms around my daughter instantly. I would cry with her, and I would tell her that I loved her and that God loves her. And this changes nothing in our relationship, and we are going to move forward together. Friends, that's God's loving response to you. One of the cool things that I learned about the For Her Pranks Resource Center is the number of services that they have for your community. And by the way, for women who come in, these services are free. Planned Parenthood will charge you because it's about making money. They don't care about you. Pregnancy Resource offers it for free. And one of the things is counseling for post-abortion. If you've had experience with this and you've buried it inside, please know they will help you. If you show up, they're not going to say, "Oh my goodness, I've seen you in the third service. I never expected you. Wow, this changes my view of you." This is not what they're going to say. What they're going to do is they're going to rejoice because you have put yourself in a place to now experience the grace and freedom and redemption that God has to offer you. So I know we're talking about a sensitive topic, but please know that your past doesn't have to determine your future. God loves you. Amen? Amen. With that said, I am an apologist. That doesn't mean I go around saying I'm sorry for things. Apologetics is the discipline of offering a reason for the hope that we believe in. So I talk about how we know the Bible's true, why God allows evil, how we know God exists, etc. 1 Peter 3:15 says, "Sanctify Christ as Lord. Always be ready with an answer." In other words, for the hope within, you and I are to be ready with an answer for why we believe what we believe. Not just me, not just your pastor, all of us. So how can we be ready when this topic comes up to make a simple case for life? Well, here it is. It's a 3-step case, and I used to make my students memorize this. I hope you'll write it down and memorize it. It's not that hard to make a simple case for life. Now, I actually don't have to write stuff down. I have a photographic memory. I just don't have any film. If you didn't get that, ask somebody over 30. Step number one. Are you ready? Step number one. This is a scientific case. The unborn is alive. The unborn is alive. You've heard people say things like, "We don't know when life begins." That's definitively false. The mom is alive. The dad is alive. The egg is alive. The sperm is alive. What it produces, an embryo, is alive. There's no period of non-life from mating until birth and beyond. It's alive, biologically speaking. If any of you teach biology or work in the sciences or have looked in a biology textbook, you can actually see certain criteria of how you gauge whether something is alive or whether it's not alive. And what's interesting is you look at this criteria, the unborn embryo and beyond has all of them. It's alive. For example, one of the characteristics of defining life is that something experiences biological growth. Now, biological growth is important because other things can grow that aren't alive. I give an example to my students. I say, "What's the difference between an embryo that grows and between like a snowball that rolls down a hill and kind of grows?" And as we talk about, they understand that a snowball is just kind of an accidental growth because of the nature of water and because of gravity. As it falls down, it's added externally. But an embryo has a certain nature. It's a certain kind of thing that's meant to grow if it has the right environment and the right nourishment. See, the unborn experiences biological growth, one characteristic of life. Others would be responding to stimuli. So look, we know the unborn is alive. In fact, what does abortion do? It kills. You can only kill something that's alive. We know the unborn is alive. Now, some of you might remember in 2008, there was the political campaign for presidency. It was Barack Obama and John McCain. Now, a very interesting event happened at a church near where I live by Rick Warren at Saddleback Church. Is he hosted both candidates, treated them with dignity, with respect. In fact, he was friends with Obama for a season and probably continues to be so. And in this event, they asked the exact same questions. It was televised, but the other candidate couldn't hear how the other candidate responded. It was really fascinating to compare and contrast. And one of the questions was about life. When does life begin? And McCain goes, at conception, I'm pro-life, instantly. He asked Obama, and Obama gave a very interesting response. Some of you might remember this if you're watching it. He said, when do you think life begins? And his response was, he goes, oh, that's above my pay grade. Exact wording. Now, I've thought about that since. Because basically what he's saying is we don't know for sure when life begins. So here's the question. If he was right that we didn't know, should we err on the side of not having abortion because you might be taking life, or go ahead and just have the abortion since we don't know if it's alive? In other words, if we didn't know when life began, does that justify abortion? In all other cases, if we're not sure if there's the possibility of life, we err on the side of protecting it. If someone hired me to level this building and build a new one and I had, you know, dynamite set up, they're like, wait a minute, is anyone inside? I'm like, I don't know. Who knows? There might be, but I'm not sure. Let's go ahead and blow it up since we don't know it's above my pay grade. Of course not. If there's the chance of life, you err on the side of protecting it. In fact, interestingly enough, do you know one of the few sitting presidents who wrote a book? In 1980, it's called Abortion and the Conscience of Life. Who wrote that? It was Ronald Reagan, 1980, 7 years after Roe versus Wade. How many of you have heard of this book? Sitting president wrote a book about life, and almost none of the press reviewed it because they didn't want anybody to know about it. You know an example he made in this book? He said, if you come across a body and you're not sure if it's alive or dead, do you go ahead and bury it? No. If there's a possibility of life, you protect it. You only bury it when you know it's dead. So even if we weren't sure when life began, we should still err on the side of protecting it. But in fact, we do know that the unborn is alive from the moment of conception. Step number one, the unborn is alive. Step number two, the unborn is separate from the mother. The unborn is separate from the mother. Now, the unborn is inside the mother. The unborn is dependent upon the mother. It's attached to the mother. What I mean is that the unborn is a separate organism from the mother. It's a distinct organism. So don't confuse attachment with being. Now, how do we know this? Well, of all states, you should know this well because of something called the Texas Heartbeat Bill. At 6 weeks, want to limit abortion because this unborn has a separate heartbeat. Why? It's a distinct organism. It's a distinct being. You can have a distinct biological sex. 50% of women have an unborn baby and that's determined at conception a different biological sex. If it's a mixed race relationship, the unborn could have different skin color. In fact, from the moment of conception, it has its own unique DNA fingerprint distinct from the mother. So the unborn is inside the mom. The unborn is dependent upon the mom for a season, but it is a distinct organism from the mother. Biologically speaking, that's not debatable. Now, maybe you've heard somebody say something like this, but a woman has a right to do whatever she wants to with her body. This is the argument from bodily autonomy. It's my body, do what I want. First off, is that true? Can you do whatever you want with your bodies, ladies? Can you? Do you decide after church, you say, you know what? Hey, it's my body. I'm going to drive down to Main Street, Lubbock, and I'm going to streak right down the middle. If your defense to the police officer is, it's my body, he's going to say, okay, it might be your body, but sorry, we don't allow you to do that with your body in public. Right? In fact, what's interesting is we do have bodily autonomy, but my rights to my body are limited when my body can potentially or actually harm yours. So look, I'm not making a political statement by this, but I find it very interesting that people will say, I'm pro-choice, bodily autonomy, but you need to get a vaccine and you have to wear a mask. Again, I'm not saying if you should get a vaccine or not. That is not my point. But you can't make an argument that a woman can have an abortion because it's her body. Keep the government out of the office with what I do with my body. That's between me and the doctor. When it comes to vaccine, now all of a sudden the government can speak and the doctors can tell you what to do. You can't have it both ways. If you want to say, you know what, I'm in favor of a vaccine, then you're conceding that we do have a responsibility from one to another, and I don't have bodily autonomy. But don't make that argument and turn around and say you're pro-choice. The reality is, look, there are people inconsistent on all sides of this debate. There are. But the intuition I think everybody knows is that our rights to our bodies are limited when we're going to harm another person, right? Well, vaccines and masks, we could discuss and debate how well those mandates work. We could talk about that. When it comes to abortion, we know exactly how well it works, and it always results in the death of an innocent human being. So it's false. You don't have a right to do whatever you want to with your body. And second, it's not her body. Number one, the unborn is alive. Number two, the unborn is separate from the mother. Number three, the unborn is human. The unborn is human. You say, well, how do you know the unborn is human? Look, we have three kids. I have a high school senior, high school freshman, and a third grader. Awesome. And I remember my wife and I, and then we have a boy and a girl. So when we were having our third, the fifth member of our family, of course, there was debates and discussions about which of the scales is going to be tipped towards a predominantly female or towards a predominantly fail. I'm really glad I said fail before male for a lot of reasons, right? Male family. But I'll tell you a conversation we didn't have. I didn't say, you know, when we're discussing what are we going to have, I never said, you know what, honey, I really hope that we have a cheetah. My wife was like, a cheetah? Imagine if we had a gazelle. How cool would that be? We didn't have that, and you're laughing at the absurdity of it because you know something, that things reproduce after their kind. It's actually called the principle of biogenesis. We know this. If mom and dad are human and they have the baby, that baby is going to be human. So take stock of what we've done. The unborn is a living human organism separate from the mother. from the moment of conception. The unborn is a full member of the human race. The question really is, how are we going to treat human beings? So there's a really simple way to make a case for life. Here's how I do it oftentimes when I'm talking with people. I'll say, I got a question for you. Who do you think gets human rights? And you tell me, who gets human rights? Humans do. Is the right to life a human right? I've never had somebody say no. If there's anything that's a right, a human right, it's a right to life. I'll say, okay, so humans get human rights. The right to life is a human right. And the unborn is human. Therefore, the unborn has the right to life. Now, one response at this point you might hear is, okay, the unborn is human, but it's not a person. You understand that move? And the argument would be, well, rights are for persons, not just for humans. And the unborn lacks some characteristic to qualify as a person, therefore doesn't have the right to life. Does that move make sense? Some will say, okay, Sean, your scientific case, I can't argue with that. The unborn is a living human being distinct from the mother, but it's not a person, therefore it doesn't have a right to life. Now, if the person's going to say that, they have to give some criteria that the unborn lacks and thus is not a person that the rest of us have and thus we're persons. So my question is, why disqualify the unborn from the right to life? As far as I can tell, there's four differences between the unborn and between the born. This is an acronym. Again, you should write this down and memorize it. It's simple and it's easy and it's intuitive and it's powerful to talk to people about. First, the acronym is SLED, and the S stands for size. Is the unborn smaller than those outside of the womb? Is there a difference in size? In virtually all circumstances. Here's the question. Does your value come from your size? Do bigger people have more value than smaller people? If so, as a whole, then it would raise an interesting question. Then wouldn't men have more value than women? Do not answer that, guys. You know, the tallest on average human population are the Swedish. The shortest on average, I think the male is 6'1", on average are the Japanese. The male is 5'5". Are the Swedish more valuable than the Japanese? Is Shaquille O'Neal more valuable than Kevin Hart? Now, if the question was more valuable to win an NBA championship, then the answer would be yes, because we're talking about instrumental value to accomplish a goal. But when we say Shaquille O'Neal more valuable, we're not talking about towards a goal. We're talking about, are they more valuable as human beings? And the answer is, regardless of size, they're equally human beings and thus have the same inherent value. Even kids' books know this, right? The Dr. Seuss book, A Horton Hears a Who? Remember the famous line of what Horton says? A person is a person, no matter how small. Friends, your value doesn't come from your size. So the unborn is smaller, but that's not enough to deny it its value and its right to life. That's the S. The L is level of development. Is the unborn less developed than those outside of the womb? The answer in almost all circumstances is yes. So just think about this. Does your value change with your level of development? Is your value tied to your level of development? Now, if you're tracking with the unreasoning, you might be thinking that is a very dangerous, slippery slope to go down, doesn't it? Because for a couple reasons. Number one, some people stop developing for different reasons. Do they have less value? Development from conception is a process over time through life. It's a process over time. I mean, they say the human brain is not really fully developed until the mid to upper 20s. Does that make somebody 30 more valuable than somebody who's 20? No. Is a 20-year-old more valuable than a teenager? Yes. No, I'm just kidding. I have two in my home so I can pick on them. Is a teenager more valuable than an adolescent? Is an adolescent more valuable than a baby? A baby more valuable than an infant? An infant more valuable than one inside the womb? No, that development changes over time. But that doesn't mean its value changes over time. So the unborn is smaller but not less valuable, has different development, but that doesn't mean it's less valuable. Third is the environment. Is the unborn in a different location? And the answer is yes. But here's the question. Does what you are change with where you are? In other words, does your value change because of your location? So I was checking this yesterday to make sure I got my stats right, and I found an article that talked about a baby that was the earliest born premature that's been able to survive. And this was July 2020 that I could find. It's a Guinness Book World of Records. They even gave him like the plaque for being in the Guinness Book World Record. And this baby was born at 21 weeks. That's 132 days early. Wow. Now, when this child was born, I mean, you could see, you could almost hold it like my water bottle, the size of this child just in your hand. How small it was. Now, the doctors worked heroically to save this child, and they did. Imagine that the vitals kind of level out, the child is resting and is fine, and a doctor walks up and kills it. What would we call that? Murder. Now just think about this. Same exact child, same exact level of development, same exact doctor, same exact act. All we change is the location, and then all of a sudden it's moral, and some people would say it's good. Friends, the unborn is in a different location, but that changes nothing about its value. Nothing about it. Fourth is degree of dependence. So size, level of development, environment, degree of dependence. The unborn, at least for the first few 21 weeks or so, is uniquely dependent upon the mother. Uniquely dependent upon the mother. So some would argue because of this dependency, it's not a person, doesn't have the right to life. That's a very strange, troublesome argument to make. What about somebody who's dependent on a kidney machine? Do they lose their personhood because of dependency? I had a senior in high school one time. He goes, man, he's a football player. He goes, I'm still dependent on my mom. But I'm going to imagine with me a scenario that you go snowmobile. And now this one also is going to take a little imagination because it's probably a long drive before you could snowmobile anywhere from here would be my guess. In fact, I drove from the top in Oklahoma all the way down towards Brownsville in one day. It was 16 hours and I was still in your state. At least 16 hours without AC in July, but I digress. So you go, you're out snowmobile and all of a sudden you see a snowmobile that's crashed. And you see, presumably, a father who's just unconscious laying there and a two-year-old that's staring at you. Now, that two-year-old's survival is 100% dependent upon you. Does that give you the right to walk away or the moral responsibility to care for this child? Friends, yes, the unborn is dependent upon the mother. But that doesn't mean it doesn't have a right to life and it's not a person. There are differences, but none significant enough to disqualify the unborn from being human. Now, you might be saying, Sean, you've talked about an embryo a lot, but an embryo, I mean, just look at it. It doesn't look like a human being. And my answer is, yes, it does. It looks exactly like a human being is supposed to look at that stage of development. We have a sad legacy, even in our country, of deciding that certain people, because of sex or age or race, don't look the way we think they should look because of some arbitrary definition of personhood, and then treating them in a way that doesn't respect their human rights. Some of you have heard the story of The Elephant Man. There's a great movie that came out in 1980 with Anthony Hopkins called The Elephant Man. It's in black and white. And John Merrick had some just gross disfigurements, severe of his body, hence they called him the Elephant Man. And in the movie, he's walking in a subway station, and he would wear a bag when he went out in public because people would see him and they would freak out. Well, he falls, the bag comes off, and a little girl does what a kid might in this kind of situation. She just yells because it catches her off guard. She screams. And all of a sudden, these people see him, and they start chasing him through the subway station, yelling obscenities and insults and threats, and they finally corner him, this small mob in a bathroom. Threatened for his life, I'll never forget what he shouts out. He says, "I am not an animal. I am a human being." And it dawns on them what he is. And the recognition of how we're supposed to treat human beings. And in shame, they turn around and they walk out. Friends, they captured something in this movie. That we shouldn't judge people by appearance. We should treat people according to the fact that they're made in the imago Dei. Male, female, black, white, rich, poor, in the womb, out of the womb, valuable human beings. Speaking on this topic, even though Roe versus Wade could potentially be overturned by the Supreme Court, that doesn't mean abortion would go away. People would flee to other states, and there's a huge movement towards the over-the-counter abortion pill. It wouldn't go away, even if it's overturned, which would be a wonderful victory. Our battle is just beginning to create a culture of life. You make a culture of life by defending the unborn, but by also caring for the unborn and caring for women. And that's what the For Her Pregnancy Resource is doing. Jesus said, leave the 99. There's some things we can't control, but focus on the one. In a sense, this pregnancy resource is like, we're going to focus on the one and the two in our community and love them. And the stories of the number of unborn that you're about to see that have been saved are remarkable and powerful. You're going to watch a video. You may know Audra Cantrell. She's the director for the Pregnancy Resource Center. When I heard I was going to meet her, in one sense, I didn't have to meet her. I already knew who she was. Why? Because I've met a whole bunch of Pregnancy Resource directors, and they're all the same. Now, what do we mean by that? They are motivated, they are driven, they don't take no for an answer, they have an unending passion for the unborn and for women, and they have a find a way of rallying people, saying, if you can just give me the resources, we're going to save lives, and they do it. And I was exactly right. Take a look at this video for yourself.